still pour some coffee. Mm-hmm. So we're now going to materiality discussion and slide deck three. I'll give the floor to Matt.
Thank you, Hans. So I think I'd start with the observation, which I think has been made already, that we start with a significant advantage on materiality over some framework setters. In we have the clarity that the conceptual framework brings us in terms of users' information needs and what users will use the information for. And so materiality to whom is answered by that, and what we've sought to do in addressing the challenge of materiality is to bring some of that clarity in from the conceptual framework. We've seen, and there's some detail on slide four, but we've seen materiality being raised repeatedly as a significant challenge in this area. There are concerns over materiality to whom. There are concerns over assessing the materiality of either qualitative information itself or materiality of quantitative information that is not in a form that is directly comparable to the financial statements. We think we have an approach that can take that challenge on. We'll be interested to hear what you say. One of the things underpinning that approach is this underlying challenge of preparers needing to be able to understand what information it is that will move a user's decision. And so that's where we've focused. The sustainability reporting industry has approached this question slightly differently, and it's more of a ask the reader of the report what they want approach, typically, you see. I think there's two challenges with that for us. First is that we start off with the idea that the report should be presented through the eyes of management. So what is important to management? And secondly, because applying that approach creates a defence for non-disclosure, which is you didn't ask for it, so I didn't give it to you. Now, of course, the problem for a user is that if they don't have information on a matter, they don't know if the matter is important. So we are trying to address that challenge. It's a difficult one to address, but that's what you'll see as a combination in the approach we're proposing on slides 5 and 6. And I summarise that as having three elements. So the first is making the cash flow assessment purpose explicit. And if the language on the slides doesn't emphasise stewardship also, then apologies, it should do. The second is providing guidance on what we call the identify step. We have a materiality practice statement which provides guidance in applying materiality here. That is just as relevant, we think, to management commentary as it is to the financial statements themselves. So all those four steps that are set out in the materiality practice statement are relevant to us, but we see a particular challenge with the first step, which is around identifying the matters on which to report. So we've structured two steps within that identification process, the first being to identify the significant matters affecting the business, and the second then to think about what is the material information that a user needs to interpret those matters. In some conversations we get asked, well, you know, how many issues should a management commentary address? Clearly, we can't give a number, but I would observe that if you look at most investment research reports, they will probably focus on 5, 6, or 7 really fundamental issues to the business, cover a lot of information on those issues and much less information on other issues. What we observe in terms of reporting at the moment is more of the opposite. So we've got a great breadth of coverage of issues, a lot of measures being reported, but sometimes it appears that those measures have only a tangential relationship to the issue that a user needs to address. So that's where we're seeking to head with that approach. The third element of our approach is to cover off some common challenges that get cited in terms of practical application of materiality. So we've identified three here. Welcome observations if there are any others that need covering, or obviously if we've covered them in the right way. But the first of those is, how does a preparer deal with a situation where they have potentially a range of potential uncertain outcomes? How does the preparer assess assess materiality in that context? The second is, having identified a matter, and let's take, for example, a concern over customer retention, the ability of the business to maintain the customer base, what information should the preparer provide? Because they may have a number of options. For example, customer satisfaction measures may support a user's assessment. Hard statistics on customer turnover rates may support a user's assessment. Discussion on past revenues in the context of customer turnover may support a user's assessment. And so what we're saying with this here to preparers is, you need to step back and see if the package of information as a whole would support a user's assessment, and look at other packages of information that you might have given instead, perhaps, you know, placing more emphasis on net promoter score measures or something like that. Would that have led the user to take a different view of the matter? So we're asking for a slightly more sort of sophisticated assessment of user interpretation of information there. And then lastly, in terms of other considerations, we just pick up on the point on aggregation, which we also come back to within the other matters section of the discussion later on. But just raising a specific concern there around the potential aggregation of information in the interests of conciseness, but sometimes that can go too far and actually obscure material divergent trends affecting the business. So we ask people to consider materiality in the context of that level of aggregation of information they provide. So three broad steps there around cash flow focus, identification of material matters and material information, significant matters and material information, and then covering off these specific considerations. So with that, I will open it up to questions and comments.
I think that the significant versus material, you're just going to make things worse. I mean, if we have a hard time figuring out what's material, which we don't, but I acknowledge that people might think that preparers do. If you say now you're going to have an additional step to figure out what's significant, it'll just really muddy the water, in my opinion. I think if you are able to assess your business model and assess the risks associated with that business model, and discuss your management performance, the things that are really important to the business itself, the things that are material are going to come right out of that. That'd be my two cents.
Can I just observe that the and perhaps it's the language that's causing confusion here. We did start out by using the describing it as material matters, as you know, to, we're not creating this new definition of significant. We're just saying, in order to work out the information you need to decide what matters are important to the business first.
Yeah, then
it's not working for you.
Yeah,
But I guess I have a similar question. Is it a confusion around matters versus information, or is it
significant versus material?
Okay, but the distinction between matters and information does make sense. It's a significant topic. Okay.
And then just a comment here, and this is some nit on the language that's used in paragraph A3. The entity is not capable of sustaining its future net cash inflows in the long term. And again, it's this notion of long term, and I think from last conversation we had, 3 years, 5 years, 20 years, 30 years. I wouldn't even know how to come up with that. I mean, when is the next financial crisis? Yeah. I mean, 20 years before the financial crisis, did anyone have an idea that we were in for the financial crisis? No. So it's, I mean, that's a really big ask, and I don't think it's practical.
It is, because we asked for that in the context of the likelihood of matters crystallizing. So as a preparer, do you think that helps you? Does it filter out those sort of very remote events that just aren't worth covering?
No, I mean, I know you've got examples here. I would find some other examples. I'm happy to come up with some. I'll take it offline and maybe provide you a couple.
Lisa.
Oh, thank you. In terms of the progression from relevance to materiality, I think I'm on board with that. Significant to material. The integrated reporting framework makes a progression from relevance to materiality. So for me, it is a natural progression, though it's one I had to think through. So I do appreciate that some guidance is necessary on that to help preparers of reports. I had quite a specific comment on paragraph A4, where it talks about the entity first identifies those matters that are significant to the management commentary. I would have thought that it would be matters that are significant to the business or to the entity.
That's a good point.
The moment that it becomes information about that matter, whether that's in A5 or A6, that's when that flip gets... Yeah, the switch gets flipped as to, you know, the question of to whom this is material. So in that case, it would be talking about the information about the matter, then it is material to the user's assessments.
Trent?
The one thing in here I think about that we struggle with is that lawyers define materiality different than accountants do. And our lawyers are very front and central in preparation of our MD&A, and the chance of likelihood is not something that they teach in law school, at least not in Canada. And so that is a big concern for us to operationalize something like this.
Deepa.
Overall, I support the approach that you've taken to materiality, what's in the conceptual framework. I think certainly the focus on cash flows works in terms of identifying what information is relevant to users. In terms of the preparer perspective, I think there needs to be some supplementary guidance on how you apply materiality to qualitative information and the narrative, because that might be harder to work out where some things, for example, non-financial, may not necessarily translate into a number just yet and impact cash flows.
Ben?
I just echo that materiality and legal thing, and I would say that sometimes the legal view is different from the accounting view, different actually from the investor view, different from the management view as well. And actually, you're seeing this in actually current litigation now, very much through the climate change lens, where sometimes it's in reports, not in reports, it's taken a legal route, not legal route, code route, to say one that's controversial, and then other systemic factor risks about are you mentioning them or not. So I don't know how that parses, but that's a definite point. And then the second one, even using something like customer or employee turnover, is that when we agree there's something material, then there's often a case of confidentiality where the company says, well, I don't want to reveal this because I think it's commercially sensitive. And then you have a back and forth argument, but saying, well, all your industry competitors know what this is and you know, so then shouldn't we know or we go around and do that? And then we sometimes have this dance, and sometimes the information comes out or doesn't come out depending on how strong we are or how material that feels. So that's definitely kind of, and that's not just customer turnover, but there's a whole host of metrics which I'm sure investors would like to know, and some which I think companies reasonably don't disclose, and some which actually they probably reasonably do not, because it's just easier for them. And then that dance is different between legal, accountant, and all of that. And then the third one I would point out was actually something that Michael raised earlier, and I'll just raise it here because it comes in other matters, which is the aggregation, but into infographics. And because we talked about narrative, and I wonder about both pictures and I wonder about digital. And at this point, I'd also say, if anyone hasn't seen the work of Hans Rosling or any of the data engineers, you should look at that. Because what you can do with infographics, or even better, moving infographics through time, can tell you in one picture more than maybe 5,000 words of reporting. And currently, very few of these frameworks have this in place. There's some about the future reporting and where this goes for. And again, if you talk to Gen Z, Gen Y, this is what they're all about. They say, oh, well, you know, you give this to me, I've got that in infographic. And I've got 10 years of history in a moving infographic. And because that can also answer the question sometimes about aggregation. So again, the more esoteric point, but I had a lot of discussions, a lot of complaints in the company about gender pay reporting and some other aspects, where when you take their mean or medians and you do point estimates, A, it looks really awful, and B, they can't explain it. And then I just pointed out, well, if you look at it in a graph, in the shape of the graph, or a scatter point, or you look at a bit in different quartiles, and you explain it that way, it's a completely plausible narrative which everyone would buy. And in fact, some of the things that I do as an investor is I will often ask, when I see a median or a mean point, what's happening in your top quartile? What's happening in your bottom quartile? In fact, there's a whole movement which is particularly looking at the bottom 60% as a different thing on that thing. So I do think some commentary or something where there is that, because there are barbell effects and there is a lot which you can hide in aggregation. But interestingly, when you disaggregate, that actually shows you a lot more information. And Hans Rosling's book goes on about this, because, yes, the mean is very important, but there's a lot within the scatter and there's a lot through time. And maybe actually a picture describing some of this might be something to consider.
Massimo.
I would like to come back to the first comment I made this morning about the role of ISB in the non-financial disclosure part. Because you know that in Europe, companies can use the management commentary to disclose the non-financial information part. So my question for you is, in the case a corporation is using management commentary as a host for the non-financial disclosure part, this materiality approach can be used by them in terms of inspiration for the non-disclosure part, because it's in the management commentary? Because if not, I think you should point out that they cannot.
Sorry, you're saying that a European non-financial reporting directive disclosure might not be material to users and therefore wouldn't need disclosing in the management commentary?
No, I mean, as a preparer, I can use management commentary to disclose my non-financial information. To decide what type of information I put in the management commentary, I use a materiality approach. So my question is, if I use management commentary as a report to disclose my non-financial information, can I use this materiality approach?
Oh, so. Unless they can get something better.
But that's a very important statement because...
Well, that's not up to us, really, because these non-financial information is not required by us. So we also do not really... cannot set materiality requirements for that kind of disclosure. It's up to Europe. But if Europe is has a very warm heart towards IFRS, usually, so maybe they'll just say you can apply these fantastic standards of the IFRS. No?
Yeah, well, I think it comes back to the, I think Chris made the observation early on about how this goes from being voluntary to mandatory and how it's applied in different jurisdictions. You know, we can only do something if a jurisdiction takes it up.
That's why I would also even be very wary of sketching a long-term view that in the end it might become mandatory, because that will just scare and make a lot of people very nervous and might discourage the use of, you know, of this rather than encourage it. Okay, yes, Chris.
So these are just questions because I'm afraid I don't really have the answer, but we seem to be talking about this as though it's going to be completely separate to materiality for the financial statements. And given my earlier comments that I see this as absolutely integral to the financial statements, I'm a little bit concerned about how far away you can actually get, at least in terms of the quantitative type information. So I think somehow we have to address it. So it's either, well, it is a separate assessment, or it's part of a package. And my preference, I think, would be it's part of the package with some extra guidance that there is going to be more narrative and more qualitative. So how do you think about that in this context? I don't know that you should end up with a different assessment of materiality.
Yeah, and apologies if that's what's come across, because really what we're saying is it's the same assessment with the same definition of materiality. We just see a particular challenge around this first step of identifying what needs to be reported on that preparers do need some help with. But you know, the principles and the application should be the same.
You're also going to have to give some examples of then how you break it down, because like if you think about materiality for financial statements, one of the things that we look at is it material in the context of a specific category of information? So, you know, if we're talking about liability, is it material in the context of liabilities? So I think you're going to have to think about things as if there's several pieces of information in this type of report, it might be, do you have to actually then think about that type of information? If we're talking about risks, how do you work out what's material in terms of risks versus what's material in terms of the business model? It might be the same, it might be different. I don't know whether I'm explaining that very well.
Well, but I think that comes back to this idea of looking at the disclosures in the management commentary and the financial statements as a single package and determining whether collectively the information you're providing will lead yep. users in the right direction.
So I'm very comforted by that statement. I didn't really quite get that from...
Okay. Clarity.
Merrick.
Thank you. I'm generally quite happy with the approach you're taking, so that's sort of worth saying before making some particular comments. Like some others... and maybe to generalise it, I think there's a danger in using words in the practice note language that take you away from the fundamental things that are already set out in the conceptual framework and maybe can be stated in the practice note. So something like saying a matter is significant to the management commentary is just another way of saying that it's a matter for which there is material information that should be included in the report. And then using words like significant takes you away from maybe thinking through that. So I think if you could find a way of saying it in such a way that it's consistent with the language that's already used in the conceptual framework, it will cause less confusion. The trouble is, when you use something different, people think you mean something different, and I know that from auditing standard setting. So the other thing I wanted to say is, one of the reasons I support this is that we see that this is something that people have to do in applying frameworks in practice in this area, not just for management commentary, but in the wider area too. And I think one of the things we've concluded is that it's necessary here, but you don't have to do it in financial reporting, and you have to understand why. The reason, seems to me, is that for financial reporting, the elements of a set of financial statements are very clearly defined, and you must address all of those elements that relate to the entity. So the boundary and the definition of the elements is clear. And that's not the case with respect to management commentary or many other things. The reason I say that is that I think it's also then important to understand what a matter is. It's a word, you have to choose some word for it, but I think the equivalent you're looking for is something that would be the equivalent of an element of the financial statements, an asset or a liability. And it can be very, very different. It doesn't have to be a resource even. You know, it could be a strategy or something. But whatever that thing is, one of the important things about it is it has to be capable of applying the second step of materiality to it, that you can define what information about it is material. And there's something there about, you can call it aggregation, but it to give you an example, it could be up or down. So it could be disaggregation. If you take something like a strategy and you think that's the element you have to describe, can you really describe or produce a faithful representation of a strategy, or is it actually does that have to be done at the components of a strategy level? So what are the objectives or series of objectives that are most important? So there is something there that I think is not clear from the initial drafting, but something that you might need to think about more is, what do we mean by a matter, and how does aggregation or disaggregation play into it? The second thing I wanted to comment on, so the comments there would sort of reflect on what's in A4. In A6, I was wondering whether that's inconsistent with the way you approach determining the information to include in a set of financial statements. If I have it right, and I apologise if I don't, I think the approach that's taken in the conceptual framework is to say you start by looking at what would be most relevant, and then you figure out whether or not you can produce a faithful representation of it. And you have to make a decision about whether you can before you move on to deciding whether or not to use that most relevant information. If I'm right about that, and if I think that is a good approach, then maybe that's even more important in this area, because not everything that would be most relevant in this area to a user is necessarily going to be capable of having a faithful representation. And so I'd encourage you to think about that aspect too. Thanks.
Thank you. Marie?
I think just to answer to Massimo's question, I think as long as you have something which is required by a national law or by European law whatsoever, you cannot decide that based on another statement or something else. You can conflict with that. So I think that even sometimes an information which is not material, it will be required by a national legislation. Unfortunately, we'd have to give it. So, but it doesn't mean that what is done here is not useful, because I think it helps you for all the other information where you are to apply its materiality. Having said that, I think it's really, really important just to have the same notion of materiality and to work with the practice statement that was also made for the financial statement, which is something great, and we use a lot as regulator, and we provide, we encourage issuer to use it. Because if something is material for the account, it's also material for all the other part of the financial statement or for other part of the financial report. So that makes sense. And regarding the wording we have on the Appendix A, it doesn't happen often, but sometimes something you are not exposed to is in itself a significant information, because saying to the market that you are not exposed to a significant risk, whereas you can imagine you are, for example, in a financial crisis to a specific country or whatsoever, might be a significant information. So if you look at the what is draft in paragraph A4, we had the impression that you consider something significant only if you have a likelihood of a matter being crystallized in your account and having an effect, whereas sometimes saying you are not affected and that will never happen to you because you are not exposed is a material information.
Actually, my concern is around A4 as well, and I share a lot of the points that Marie just made, and then also to build on Deepak's comment earlier about the qualitative information. I suppose it's a suggestion as much as a comment, but I'm tempted to suggest that companies disclose or at least include a degree of discussion around major drivers. For example, we're going to have a long discussion around segmentation and classification, but if you're a manufacturing company and your top line is dependent on three manufacturing facilities, then it is extremely relevant, in my view, to understand the age of the facilities doing that, what the capacity constraints are, when they're going to need refurbishment, that kind of thing. And unless you've contracted for that, there's no disclosure requirement, to my understanding, at the moment. The same would go for financial companies and their sales and their distribution forces, anything along those lines, because if the way that it's written at the moment, it's a materiality concept, but it's the drivers of the materiality that, in my view, can be as important as the number itself. So that is what I think would address some of the qualitative concerns. Otherwise, there's no way you're going to get anything qualitative in here unless it's going to talk to the party line.
Lioko.
Thank you. Okay, so I think materiality is a starting point for investors or users to assess or analyze the entity company or the preparer's financial statement. But on the other hand, it is also a starting point for preparers, companies, to describe in the management commentary. However, I think sometimes materiality is very... materiality, current materiality is not the future materiality. But so actually in the document it says the materiality should be prepared for the future cash flows and future choices. So I think for some company, it will be okay the current materiality is relating to the future cash flow. For example, making decision about the investment to the R&D or human resources. Maybe in that case, the return will be acquired in the future. But sometimes the current materiality is related directly to the current business model. In some circumstances, it is different from the future materiality. So I think we have to think about the materiality and the time or the time horizon or the when the materiality is changing or when, how the management has to think about the materiality is related to current business or the future business, or the, it is very continuing the thinking of that. Thank you. Sorry, it's very big.
So, I mean, just to sort of clarify on that, I think we have a definition here at the moment which is seeking to focus on materiality to an assessment of the future cash flows of the entity. Obviously, those future cash flows, the assessment of those will take account of the current cash flows of the entity, because that's going to be your starting point. Are you feeling that we need more emphasis on the future cash flows or less? Or
so actually I had experience that I was called to identify one of the biggest company in Japan to identify what is their materiality. I will call to their council. So, but actually, they are thinking about the current materiality. But some people are looking for the future materiality. I think there is some gaps with the management and with the investors, with the bank or the, some stakeholder. So if you would like to emphasis on the future net income, so you need to emphasis on that point.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, I just wanted to mention, as others have, that I completely agree with the proposal of aligning between management commentary and the concept of and the materiality practice statement. But having said that, I do have a couple of comments. First of all, I agree completely with Michael's comment. I have a hard time to distinguish what would be important to the current and future cash flows, as mentioned, as significant, but would not be something that the user would take into account when making a decision. So I do think that the four-step process has enough guidance to support the materiality decision. I would simplify it. One suggestion I have is that management should report on its thought process with respect to the four-step process in terms of both quantitative and qualitative aspects that have been taken into account, and somehow try to address earnings potential impacts over that too, thinking about dividends. Another thing I would like to mention is about aggregation. I think that aggregation has an important link with balance. It can jeopardize the important characteristics of balance, and it can somehow omit important trends. So basically, I wonder how you guys plan to address the link between aggregation and balance in order to avoid that by aggregation you just net negative news into a little bit higher positive news. And the last part, it's something that I mentioned before in the objectives, looking at the integrated reporting framework. I think that in the materiality analysis, you guys should somehow stimulate that the companies do have contacts with the users. I mean, not something that would be mandatory, but more in a principle-based guidance of including the user in the discussion of the materiality issues.
Andreas.
Thanks. As others have commented on significant versus material, I would be cautious in that language, not only because they are defined terms in the literature, think about significant influence, things like that, they just add a certain context. And the question is that a higher or lower threshold in relation to material? The other bit that I would like to flag to you from a non-native speaker's perspective. I mean, whenever you come up with these qualifying words, important, material, significant, be cognizant when these are being translated into a different other language, because sometimes the target language may not make that subtle distinction between these words. Mm-hmm. Talking about language, if I refer your attention to slide 6, you quote from the FRC guidance on the strategic report. And I find it quite interesting that they also have a two-step approach, yet their wording is a bit different. In the second line, they say, as a first step, consider whether the particular matter is material. Whereas you're saying, step one, you identify information that has the potential to be material, which may be an unintended difference, but I see a huge difference in between here. And the question is, what is it that we mean? Because that directly links it back to my previous comment as to, are we arguing from the user's perspective or through the eyes of management? Management does know that something is material or not. They don't need to speculate whether it has the potential. They do know that it is material, and therefore they're reporting on it. So I think here the perspective comes back into play and to me is quite important. And the last point, I was waiting for Marek to pick this one up. Is there a potential relation to key audit matters? Many people have flagged the point on verifiability. And I think if we are talking about material issues and relate that to that the auditor needs to actually pick up the most significant points, especially when it comes to uncertainty, but a potential big impact on the company, I would think that these should be picked up by the audit profession as well. So I see that there is a link here into probably some of the audit literature.
Can I comment on a couple of the things that have come up? So first of all, on that point about significant versus material and matters versus information, so the reason we didn't go with material matters is because the way material is defined, it just doesn't really work with matters, because the definition of materiality is talking about information being material if it's capable of influencing decisions. So it just wouldn't work literally to say that the matter can be material. It just wouldn't fit the definition. Now, we explored something like Marek's idea, which would be to say you look for the matters about which information might be material. But I think that makes the two-step process then sound rather strange, because you'd say you look for matters about which information might be material, and then you look for material information about those matters. And it sounded a bit over-engineered in a way. But I think your basic idea of saying stick to existing defined terms as much as possible, I think, is really important and valuable. On the has the potential to versus is, in a way, that's something that's also in the four-step process in the materiality practice statement, because the idea there is you identify a pool of things that might be relevant or might be material, and then you do a bit more work, and then you get to the ones that actually are. So it's sort of you're identifying the big pool first, and you fish in it, and you identify the things that you actually pull out at the end. So, but that's obviously something we need to look at. The other thing I wanted to comment on was Chris's comments about, are we talking about two different materialities, one for financial statements and one for the management commentary? I don't think we're talking about a different process. I think we're talking about the same kind of process. Now, obviously, what would be very odd is if you're thinking of it in purely quantitative terms, it would be odd to say that you've got financial statement materiality of 1 million, let's say, and management commentary of 2 million or 500,000 or something. That would be kind of strange. I think the difficulty we had is that for financial statements, materiality is defined in the context of financial statements. So the information is material judged in the context of the financial statements. Yeah. So now we had to think, well, what happens when we transport that to the management commentary world? Are we going to say it's material in the context of the financial statements? Is it material in the context of the management commentary? Is it material in the context of the combined package, which I think is kind of what you were, is your probably desired end goal? And if we say it's the combined package, does that mean we have to go back to the financial statements and say maybe for financial statements the context is the combined package? Well, that's probably a step that's a bit too far for us at the moment if the management commentary isn't even mandatory. So so I think there's a few things for us to think about there.
It's wonderful how complicated we can make things. Okay. Can you summarize what you heard, or did Peter did a pretty good job, I suppose?
I think Peter hit the nail on the head in terms of some of the sort of terminology problems we're having in articulating what it is we want to achieve here. I think some of the comments have suggested there is a perception that materiality assessment is based on current cash flows and sometimes is based on future cash flows. So I think we need to think about how we address that perception. I note the comments around the four-step process and whether we need to elaborate on that. Some people, I think, feel we don't need to elaborate on step one. Some people seem to support the idea of elaborating on step one. The question of how we define a matter is also a point important as well as our decision to use significant instead of material. So I think there's two aspects to address there.
Okay. So
okay, can I just add to that? I mean, I think we did hear strong support from people for building on the framework and building on the materiality practice statement.
I was going to say, one of the ways you could think about it is just, can you give more explicit examples mm-hmm. under each of the four steps rather than recreate something different?
Yeah.
Because you can say, you know, you think about measurable commentary, here's the example of particularly the qualitative stuff.
All right, shall we move on to coherence?